or call 510-848-6767, extension 235. The application deadline has been extended.
The quest for truth continues.
Yo soy Gavilán Molina, and you're listening to KPFA 94.1 and KPFB at 89.3 FM in Berkeley, with 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, and KFCF at 88.1 FM in Fresno, Califas. Yo cruising to La Onda Bajitas, Radio del Barrio Aslan. Listening to KPFA 94.1 and KPFB at 89.3 FM here in Basurtlas, with 97.5 in Santa Cruz at K248BR 97.5, and you can also get 88.1 FM in Fresno, Califas. You cruise into La Onda Bajitas, Radio del Barrio Aslan. Tonight, May Friday the 11th, 2018, we're going to take back La Noche, so open up your mentes to a truly unique experience in Radiolandia. We're a new citizen with a new consciousness of a new country where many worlds are posible. Cruise with us as we take it from rock to revolution, to ritmo hasta la resistencia con la voz del pueblo del sol, aquí nomás on Free Speech Radio Pacifica Network. We are La Onda Bajitas crew. We march, we protest, and we report. We are NPR Radio Comunitario, Orale. And we are coming at you live with liberation programming here from the mothership in Basurtlas, Califas Land. Orale. And coming up next is Radio Lean with your hosts, Xochitl Bernadette Moreno, bringing you much information, movement radio. At 8:30, we got Ton Gonzalez across Indian land, bringing you up to date on what's happening across this country on tribal nations. Orale. And myself, along with Pedro Pepez Reyes, our board op, and I've got Gabriel here, my godson to the side. We are La Onda Bajitas crew. And we're going to turn it over now to Xochitl of Radio Lean. Welcome back, Xochitl.
Buenas noches, Radiolandia. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Radio Olin. Oh, Mateo. Sending thanks out to all corners, to all directions, to all beings. Saying thank you to all who have contributed to sustaining our work here, and to all of you for doing the good work and walking in a good way. So tonight, we're going to welcome back to the program a dear friend, a dear teacher, Maestro Matsatsin. Hey, Masa, you with us? Masa, Matsatsin.
¿Me escuchas?
Yes, we've sending those vibes across the airwaves. Thanks for joining us here on Radio Olin.
Very good. I hear you good now. Thank you.
So, Masa, why don't you give a nice greeting to all the home boys and home girls out there?
Kuali tonali nochantlakali wa nochantziwat. We kuali tonali ome sipakli. I said, how's it going, my home boys and my home girls? It's a beautiful day today. It's a day two crocodile today. The second day of a 13-day cycle called Chochis. Fíjate. It's Chochi flower.
It's springtime. The flowers are blooming.
Eso mero. And And at the same time, it's the beginning of a new 13-day cycle. Ay, perdón.
Ah, pues, y ojalá you can share, drop a little bit of knowledge about this new cycle and where we are and what that means, both cosmically and then just here in the reality of the quality of time. But before we get to all that, I know that you have just come back from Manhattan, the other side over there in Manhattan. You were over there with Brother Tony, with Elton Gonzalez, and doing the work to amplify indigenous voices in the UN. Can you tell us a little bit about your travels?
Yeah, seguro que sí. It was very, very nice. Very interesting. Like I said, we just got back from Manhattan, a.k.a. Manhattan, New York. And ya la podamos Manhattan because there's so much raza that's there. It's taking care of business there. And so today, like I said, it's the day of the crocodile, the day of a beginning of a new cycle.
Can you talk a little bit louder, Masa?
¿Mande?
¿Puedes hablar un poquito más fuerte? Gracias.
Okay, and... Yes, okay. It is the day of a new 20-day cycle que se llama Huitzilopochtli, okay?
Okay.
Es que viene siendo la vigilia for the rains, like that. So the vigil for the fertilizing rains, the big vigil. And like I said, we're in a 13-day cycle, one flower, that's guided by the old coyote, coyote viejo. Entonces, I'm telling you about this 13-day cycle that we just began. It is a fourth 13-day cycle. So as we travel in these 13 days, there's a lot of potential in every given day. But the 13-day cycle talks about the mission of the Piece of Time. And so I like to move in this regard. Try to follow the potentials. Porque potentials, wow, is the most important thing. Sometimes potential is even better, or sometimes even more important than actually doing something is knowing you have the potential to do it. Okay? Then you can choose if you do it or not. Pero sabiendo que tienes el potential, it gives you a big break, you know, a big opportunity. So the last 13-day cycle that we were in was called the 13-day cycle of the deer, venado. So we follow from the deer to the flower. And the one before that was the 13-day cycle of the jaguar. So now let's get back to that one, the 13-day cycle of the jaguar. And that happened to be the cycle that we were in at the UN from April the 24th until April the 16th to the 27th was the timing of that cycle. And we were there. On the 27th was the day 13 flower, okay, of the 13th cycle of the jaguar. Perdón, digo, 13 calavera, 13 skull. So, transformation. So all these things that I'm saying right now doesn't make a whole lot of sense together. Pero we're talking about potential again. So it was the potential of transformation. So let me take you back a little bit. So when I get to the UN this time around, this is my third year here. And you're right. In my first year, I was invited by Tony Gonzalez, Mr. T, the original Chicano Globetrotter, with all our love and respect that we have for him. And he brought me in as a delegate under the AIM West organization that brought me. And so it's pretty good. I came in the first time because I was bringing in a grandfather from Peru named Kenko Harawi Kespec that we thought would be able to come and bring his message of unity of the continent. You might remember, Choshi, that I had the staff from Peru.
Yes.
That I went to go pick up over there. A staff that had traveled already from Peru all the way to Mexico and stopping in 10 different countries coming up. And then I received it in Mexico and the responsibility to do a reunion here in the States, in the U.S., USA. So I decided to do it in New York because I saw that all of the raza from each of the countries that the staff had been in, well, they all live in New York. It's pretty universal there. And all our pueblos are there. So we did it there. And for that purpose, Tony helped me get into the what's called the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. So every year, the United Nations has a space for indigenous people, specifically for indigenous people, and it's 2 weeks. So it's 10 days. So we get a pass, and we're able to come in and and participate and you know, bring information, or sometimes people come to bring complaints of human rights violations and a lot of that, and people come sometimes, you know, with solutions even, however, not everybody gets a chance to speak because there's so many people.
They need a talking stick.
No, they need a talking stick, and they do have one. They got a pretty good talking stick. This year, the president of the panel is a young lady, maestra. Perdona, doctora, and she's really quick with her talking stick. She'll turn your button off in your middle of the sentence, and because we only get 3 minutes, fíjate, 3 minutes to speak, and they come from far away, many nations away, and for those 3 minutes, hopefully. And then, but anyway, that was very noticeable. The first year, I didn't get a chance to speak. I did submit my statement, and I submitted a statement, you know, dealing with human rights violations against youth, and particularly indigenous youth, and the violence against indigenous youth. And the second year, I did get an opportunity to speak, and I was I did an intervention, calling for a moratorium on all immigration issues, particularly the deportations, the retention, the detentions against the people, until there was a system in place that guaranteed and was verifiable, that guaranteed the human rights and the rights of the people that are being affected. The civil rights, the property rights, everything that's happening to our people, that we've been targeted, you know. And also I called out that what's going on is what I consider a mass relocation of original nations, the biggest you've seen. So and people are not standing up and calling it that. They think that these are just quote-unquote illegal aliens or undocumented people, when in reality they're nations, they're original First Nations. So anyway, that's the way that went on the second year. And this year, when I came, this year I also did not have an opportunity to speak in the general forum or general assembly because there were so many people, but I did get to I applied for, and we were granted a space for what they call a site event. So a lot of times there are many site events going on throughout the time of the general assembly, with people presenting their particular point of view or expressing the needs that they come from their own countries or their place of origin. What to us, we took advantage of the site event. And we called it Circle of Grandmother and Grandfathers. That's como Circle de Abuelas y Abuelos. Of course, having to reflect to the sacred circle of grandmother and grandfather sages that I belong to. And so anyway, but the first week, I started talking to people about the need to form or to have our own space, our own body of original nations where we can bring these issues to. Because here we are, you come, like I said, from far away, and we have 10 days out of the year, 10 days set aside for indigenous people. Even though there are goals at the UN that are being carried out on a daily basis throughout, but originally and officially we have 10 days. And so I talked about this, and we talked about an idea that we had put out quite a while ago, at least a couple of years ago, called the International Council of First Nations. And so I spoke this to many people, and believe it or not, people started responding. Many people, just about everybody we spoke with, different nations, different peoples from around the world, they started responding. Actually, people from Austria, Siberia, Japan, the Polynesian Islands. We even got the signature and the participation of the king of the Polynesian Islands.
Beautiful.
Of the nation of Atui, King Akela. And his wife as well, the queen, the high chief of the Polynesians, like I said, Australia, many, many people from Ecuador, from Peru, they began, signing my little notebook, and which is my little chicken scratch of the International Council of First Nations. So it was pretty interesting. Once we didn't know about the site event yet, but once we learned about our site event that had been approved, we made a flyer and started inviting people. Now I made a flyer inviting people to discuss the potential, the possibility of putting together a council of First Nations. And
how are you going on that endeavor, Matsatsin?
Well, it was very, very incredible. our site event was actually scheduled for Thursday. The whole conference ends on a Friday. And so, I tell the truth, my idea, as you know, people say that I'm a fanatic on calendar and times, which I swear that I'm not. But I was planning to present about the calendar and time. That was my idea. But when I saw so many people with so many desires and needs to speak and to speak up and everything, I said, wow, we need to turn this into the event of the First Nations, International Council of First Nations. And we did. So we started inviting people. I made a new flyer for founding members' ideas, once again, to plant the idea. And we did. We got there together at 1:15, which was our time. By the way, our site event had actually been canceled because, being our first time of having a site event, we didn't have the experience, and we didn't follow all the steps. There's many, many steps that we got to be watching for.
Things to learn.
Yes, sir, of course.
And well, Matatzin, we have to take a quick music break. But yes. So, Radiolandia, I want you to stay tuned. Let's hear the rest of this beautiful story about the forming of the Council of First Nations at the UN, more about Maestro Matsatsin's journey. So stay with us here on KPFA's Lomba Bajita. Buenas noches, Radiolandia. You're tuned in to KPFA's La Onda Bajita. I'm your host, Xochitl Bernadette Moreno, and this is Radio Olin, or Movement Radio. We're talking with maestro and dear friend Matsatsin. Matsatsin's telling us about his journey back from Manhattitlan, back to Califatlan, and sharing the journey of putting together the Indigenous First Nations Council at the UN, and the end of that amazing Tresena. So Matsatsin, how did things wrap up and how did the council come together? Did we lose Matsatsin? He may have lost us, but his work is so powerful. Just the fact that all of these different Indigenous peoples whose voices weren't being given a full platform, you know, 10 days from when 10 days as a platform for people to air their grievances is certainly not enough. And we see this time and time again where authorities and power structures try and have only a small bit of time and contain our needs, but the overflowing response by people who need to express their grievances, whose lives are on the line, whose people's lives are on the line, it's important to create a space to elevate those concerns, to elevate those voices. And so, Matsatsin, I, you know, really commend you in taking on this work in a new way. Do we have you back with us?
Yes, I'm right here.
And the Lipwis. So, how did things wrap up?
Well, it was interesting. See, what we did, like I said, we had what we call our site event. We call it the Circle of Grandmother and Grandfathers. And we put something out. It was called, we said, please come and join us in discussion and establishing the International Council of First Nations and signing a treaty between our original peoples to promote the protection of and preservation of family, water, land, and its resources, the arts, and the liberty of expression. economic, social, and cultural development, and respect and implementation of the conventions and the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. And believe it or not, like I said, we got so many people coming. Anyway, well, the real important thing is that one of the main members of the permanent forum, Jesus Blanco, who happens to be from Mexico, a good friend of ours now, and he came in, he was present too. So we had actually a member of the council that was very important of the permanent forum. So we started discussing. People started coming in. They signed. We had over 40 people come in. And the most interesting thing is that we began with a canceled event. We were able to get the event back, scheduled again. And then guess what? Our 1 hour and 15 minute event, that's how long it usually takes, people have, it started stretching and stretching. And I realized that no one was really planned to hold a space after us. And I kept asking permission to go a little further, a little longer, a little further. Mm-hmm. And they kept saying, go ahead. And I said, go ahead. And I said, go ahead. But guess what? We went to 5.5 hours. So our little event, it turned out to be an international group of peoples of all nations, of all the world, in different regions. We have people from Asia, from Africa, from Europe, different peoples, original nations. So we ended up coming to the conclusion that we needed to make the council, and we needed to do it now. The time was on our side. It sure was, huh? It extended and extended and extended. And then, so we got it. We did the council. We created the council as, according to our declarations of indigenous peoples, they have a right to create such a body. And then...
And how will that work move forward, Matatin?
Say that again?
How is that work, how is the work of that treaty and the work of that council going to move forward?
Well, it's going to move forward because we're all going to move together. Here's the deal, that not only did we create a council, but then we have to create a body, a governing body, okay? And this is all interim because we just are barely putting it together. This one of our members is from Bolivia. He actually works with Evo Morales over there very closely. And so he's got a lot of good plans. I kept hearing him throughout the conference when he would speak. I noticed that he had solutions. He would always come out with ideas and solutions. I said, wow, that'd be a real heavy guy to be on our council.
Hmm.
And funny, he never signed the letters that were going around to try to get people to come in, but he did come. And then he became part of a council. In
Beautiful.
Fact, he's in charge of the council. What we did, we had elections. So we had a coordinator called the first coordinator, and then we have four coordinators under there that are regional coordinators that represent different parts of the world. And then we have the secretary, of course, and then we have what we call the commissions. So we established three commissions: a commission on the Mother Earth, protection and defense of Mother Earth and resources; the second one, ancient or ancestral knowledge and wisdom and languages; and the third commission is the commission on human rights and jurisprudence. And incredible. Mm-hmm. The people signed up for those commissions, you know, and we had an election. And I was nominated and selected as the first coordinator at the moment. And then we have people from different areas. We have young people. I was hoping to put in a youth council, our commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to one of the young ladies trying to encourage her to step up and speak up for a youth commission, and we began. But then they didn't, it's interesting, they didn't want to separate in either in gender or in age, you know, which is very, very good.
Pues todos somos uno, ¿eh? We are all one.
But guess what? But the young lady, 18-year-old, you know, her name is Alitia. She's from the Omaha Nation, Alitia Phillips, 18 years old. She is the representative of the U.S. and this whole region. It's incredible.
Mm.
So in other words, everybody wants to work. You know?
Beautiful. Well, we bless your work and elevate it and hold it up.
One more little thing I must say. Our first reunion is in Mexico City.
Okay.
On July 24th to July 30th of this year.
Ah. Yes, that's always a good time, meeting for the zenith passage of the sun. Well, in this short bit of time we have left, Matsatsin, can you give Radiolandia a little bit of information about this next Trecena that we're in and things that they can know about the potential that exists in this cachito of time?
Well, that's what I was telling you. Then we were in the 13-day cycle of the jaguar. And so I knew that we had to be audacious and tenacious. Like, don't get bothered by the small stuff, and don't get your eyes off the mark. Okay, but on the very last day, the 13th day, with the days of Skol, there's also a transformation. Only if we did not hesitate, which we didn't, and we created it. The very next day, the 13-day cycle of the deer, on that day we presented the council before the whole forum, okay? It was late to get into the record of the forum, but nonetheless, we have statutes and we have agreements, and with signatures, original, we presented that to the president, and she received it. So our council was received. It was like a birth certificate of a brand new baby being born, okay? And that was on the day of the deer, in which we stayed there in New York. But now, we just came into and, oh, yeah, and I was saying all this time, I was talking to my daughter, Kitsali, and to people that I'm working with. I'm telling them, look what's going on, 13-day cycles. Look how much work is being done in these 13-day cycles. And we're just following along with the potentials. So now we're in the potential of the 13-day cycle of the flower, Chochi, like yourself, Chochi. And it represents maturity, completion, and everything that's accomplished by love, beauty, and positive endurance. Now, interesting enough, one of the guides of the 13-day cycle is Wewekoyot, the old coyote. And, of course, he represents, you know, the mainly experience and learning from your experiences. Plus, also the symbol of the dance, artistic and spiritual creativity. And so this 13-day cycle that we're in today. So you can find all this information, in, like I said, in my website. We have two websites. One, a brand new one we have, aztechnology.com. That's aztechnology.com, aztechnology. And here you can actually register for your Tonali, which means a piece of the sun, to find who you represent, or excuse me, where you fit in this cosmic rhythm. Now, one thing important, Chochi, you know, because you hear me speak a lot, you've been with me many times, even in Mexico City, and of course, in the pyramids, and we always say it's not about us. We're not really finding our good luck or bad luck or our horoscope, things like that. We're learning about a piece of time in which we took our first breath of life. And the potential that exists there that we have access to. So it's all about responsibility once you learn your identity. And your identity, of course, is written in the cosmos. It's written in the stars. It's written upon the earth and everything that exists. And our grandfathers put all that into what we call the Aztec calendar, which we say now is and can prove pretty much that is the culmination of all the calendar systems. And believe it or not, all these 40-plus nations that signed our agreement, that are part of our International Council of First Nations, all of them, we presented the calendar to them, including to the king of the Polynesian kingdom of Atui, who was born in the year of the reed and the day of the herb. So in other words, everybody is interested in finding who they are, what is their potential, so they can fulfill their mission. And it's about time. It's not about you or I. So that's what I can share with you today, Chochi.
Thanks for sharing all of that and for all your work and carrying that staff from all the way from down in Tuantansuyo and bringing it all the way up here and then this work that has lasted for the past few years. And may the council be strong and may those all of its goals be met.
Yes, definitely. We're looking forward to it. As I was saying, our first reunion is in July 24th to the 30th in Mexico. And, of course, we're going to be walking on the Zenith Passage like we've been doing now. It'll be 11 years, right along with the Declaration of Indigenous People, 11 years. We're celebrating that as well. And one of the articles of the Declaration really, really talks about how not only do we have a right to the ancient culture that our ancestors left to us, but we have a right to develop it to the next level. So we're using what mechanism we have available to us now, which is all this technology. So
that's right. So you better go to aztechnology.com, mi gente. aztechnology.com. Pues muchísimas gracias, Matzatzin. Tlazucamati. Thank you for joining us. I am your host, Xochitl Bernadette Moreno, and that was this week's edition of Radio Olin. Ometeo, Mexica, Mexica Tiawi.
Construiremos la fraternidad. Todos nos comprometimos en la
mesa del Señor a construir en este mundo el amor. Que al luchar por los hermanos se hace la comunidad. Cristo vive en la solidaridad. Cuando el pobre crea en el pobre, ya podremos cantar libertad. ¡Órale! Cuando el pobre crea en el pobre, construiremos la fraternidad. Cuando el pobre busca al pobre y nace la organización, es que empieza nuestra liberación. Cuando el pobre anuncia al pobre la esperanza que él nos dio, ya su reino entre nosotros nació. ¡Órale!
Que bolé, yo soy Gavilán Molina. I'd like to thank Xochitl for that excellent program with Matasin, bringing us up to date on what's happening around los cosmos of Califaslan. You're listening to La Ondas Radio Free Aslan. That's right. Resistance, persistence, disruption in times of chaos and conflict and uncertainty. Oradle. Now I'm going to turn the mics over to Across Indian Land with Don Gonzalez. Good to have you back in the cabina, Don.
Oh, thank you, Miguel, and greetings, my relatives. Welcome to another segment, Across Indian Land. And tonight we do want to bring you a special programming direct from the border there with Mexico and the U.S. and the U.S. administration, current administration, determined to want to build a wall across 2,000 miles there. And that wall also intends to go through the Tohono-O'odham reservation. That's about 4,500 square mile reservation that this wall will cut through. And meantime, the militarization is going on. Technology is being brought in. So we will be talking to Mr. David Garcia, Elder Tohono-O'odham. And David was also with a delegation that included AIM West peoples at the United Nations in New York just recently at the 17th session of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, which Xochitl Moreno just talked about, along with Masatzin and his presence there. But David gave a very strong statement, and we're going to be listening to him. And there was a little dialogue that went on, inner dialogue at the UN at the same time, where a statement was given by an NGO, the International Indian Treaty Council, and then the United States responding. It was regarding Leonard Peltier, and the United States was compelled to respond. And then we had another statement from Ms. Jean Roche. We hope to hear all of that in this segment here. But before we do, and I just wanted to mention that there has been a bill introduced in the legislature here in Sacramento, Senate Bill 1490, and it was introduced by Senator Henry Stern from the 27th District, Southern California, and the bill pertained to a statewide calling for Indigenous Peoples Day, the second day, the second Monday in October. And that was introduced in January, and unfortunately was pulled out in April, I heard. But let's keep an eye on that Senate Bill 1490. Might come back, and we need to call all legislators to help encourage pushing that. Meanwhile, as you all know, across California, many cities have called for Indigenous Peoples Day. Berkeley, here in the Bay Area, being the first in the state and perhaps in the country. But we also now have Sacramento, Santa Cruz, San Francisco just recently, about a month or two ago, declared Indigenous Peoples Day. So we want you all to, you're within the listening range, to organize and get your city councils to declare Indigenous Peoples Day second Monday in October, and then we can see how it floats through the legislature to get the other cities involved in that way, to in the process of decolonization. And so my relatives, I don't know, Pedro, do we have time? Let's go into some music real quick with Cody Blackbird Band and Tribal Jazz. Tribal Blues, rather.
kine kine ayo yo ayo kine kine ayo yo ayo ayo kine kine
That's some tribal blues there, my relatives, and that was live from Chicago, the Cody Blackbird Band, so check them out. We'll try and play them again, but on the telephone we have David Garcia, Elder Tohono O'odham, to give us a report on the border and his recent trip to New York at the United Nations. David Garcia, aho. David. David, are you there? Well, let's see, we might have... Okay, are you there, David? Hello? Well, let's see. We'll try and get back with him, but in the meantime, we'll see if David can call back, but maybe Pedro at the boards can... Let's put on the tape of David Garcia speaking at the United Nations, delivering a talk about the border that Tohono O'odham people are going to resist. Let's see.
With Janin Hazi of the International Indian Treaty Council, you have the floor.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to share this statement on behalf of my elder, Lenny Foster, board member of the International Indian Treaty Council and retired supervisor of the Navajo Nation Corrections Project. Approximately 30,000 indigenous peoples are incarcerated in 23 states, with an additional 4,000 imprisoned in the federal system. Tribal members living on reservations are incarcerated in federal prisons at a rate of more than 249 per 100,000 residents. Due to the Major Crimes Act, which gives the federal government jurisdiction for selected crimes on Indian lands, mandatory minimum sentences and the abolishment of parole in the federal system mean indigenous peoples face harsher punishments than non-natives for what are effectively local crimes. One such person who has been repeatedly brought to the attention of the forum over the past years is Leonard Peltier. Despite its public claim that they are committed to enforcing the law in a consistent manner with the Constitution and with the rights and dignity of all citizens, the U.S. government has failed to address the staggering number of constitutional violations in Leonard Peltier's case and the indignities to which he has been subjected, including but not limited to substandard medical care and physical abuse while in U.S. custody. The repeated denial of Peltier's petition for executive clemency has clearly demonstrated that there is no mechanism for gaining justice for human rights defenders in the United States. These injustices have set a dangerous precedent, leading to the increased criminalization of land rights defenders. Governments have partnered with energy companies to develop new laws and processes to continue the theft of indigenous lands, territories, and resources, while increasing the severity of state-sanctioned violence and use of crowd control weaponry in violation of international conventions. One such case involves Marcus Mitchell, a young Diné water protector who, while taking part in the defense of 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty territory at Standing Rock, was shot in the face from less than 35 feet away by a beanbag shotgun. The force was so extreme the beanbag lodged into his face. Marcus was unarmed, had his hands up. He walked to the front line to try to shield his relatives from violence visited upon them by the highly militarized police force. He conducted himself with bravery and honor, yet he is the one facing charges in an unjust and biased legal system. We cannot let this young man become another Leonard Peltier. We cannot allow the state to continue to act in this manner with impunity. There is no justice for our black and brown relatives that are murdered by police forces and private citizens are criminalized to protect the interests of corporations. So my question is why, in the case of Peltier, has the repeated call for dialogue between the United States, appropriate human rights bodies, and indigenous peoples not been answered? And how do the experts suggest we work to enable international mechanisms to effectively bring attention to and redress for these atrocities? Thank you.
Oh, my relatives, that was Ms. Jawsey speaking for the International Indian Treaty Council at the United Nations. During that same week that David Garcia spoke, Friday, April the 20th, and Ms. Jawsey spoke there, I think it was Wednesday the 18th. But David, are you on the air now?
Yes, okay. And thank you, Tony Gonzalez.
Yes, David, tell us real quick what's going on recently at the border, and we do have your speech that you gave that we want to play on the air, so, but tell us a little bit about what's going on there at the border. It's the U.S.-Mexico line crosses, 62 miles across your 4,500 square mile reservation. But your peoples, yourself, the Elders Council are determined not to have that wall built, yet it's getting militarized. So tell us what's going on there since we last spoke.
Early this week, for your audience, early this week, the National Guards has been deployed to the Tonal Autumn Nation. And it was one of my community representatives that sits on the District Council who shared that information with me, but they are not along the international border, meaning the National Guards. They are on Route 86, which is the state route that goes straight through the Tonal Autumn Nation from Tucson to the far west of the end of the Tonal Autumn Nation. Of course, the governor of Arizona, Ducey, has supported the President Trump's executive order to deploy the National Guards, but as an update, that's what's happened early this week.
Mm-hmm. And the Tonal Autumn Nation is sovereign. So, how much resistance is the Tribal Council putting up?
Well, just prior to attending the permanent forum in New York City, the chairman of the Tonal Autumn Nation, Edward Manuel, did issue out an executive order. Basically telling the nation's members that, in fact, the chief of the Tucson sector would notify the Tonal Autumn Nation if the National Guards were going to be deployed. So that was the understanding between the executive branch and the chief of the Tucson sector. So as I said before, they have been deployed. Whether or not they were notified by phone or by letter to the chairman of the Tonal Autumn Nation, but the National Guard has been deployed onto the Tonal Autumn Reservation.
And David, here in the Bay Area and in the Southwest and throughout that is listening in, to get more of a historical idea of your reservation, the Tonal Autumn Nation, right at the border in Mexico and in the U.S., and you were already separated from your peoples with the U.S. borderline from the Gadsden Purchase of that time, 1854. So people have to think of that as the first separation of your nation, and now they want to put a wall. And this is why your people are so desperately saying there is no need for this wall to separate you further, plus the damage to the sacred sites. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yes, the Tonal Autumn Nation has passed a resolution opposing the wall. Also, including in the resolution, speaks to the heart of these congressional acts that have been waived under Homeland Security. And also the Supreme Autumn Council, who lives in the state of Sonora in the country of Mexico, has also taken a position which they themselves held a peaceful gathering there along the international border, but right at the San Miguel Gate. So they too are also opposed to the wall.
And David, is there a phone number, a website, or some place that people can stay in communication or know more of the developing news there at the border?
Yes, the Autumn in Mexico, you can log on to Autumn in Mexico. The individual who is their spokesperson, Esteban, is also posting it on Facebook in terms of what's been happening in Sonora, but in particularly our relatives who are related to me, who both brothers were actually deported. They were denied entry into the United States onto the Tohono Nation. The agent was questioning their tribal ID card, the validity of their ID card. But as a result, they were both apprehended by the United States Border Patrol and then transferred to a prison outside of Tucson, and then deported. And the two individuals are Joaquin Esteban Reyna and Ernesto Reyna as well. And these two individuals are my relatives. Mm-hmm. So that's the injustice that's going on among the tribal members on both sides of the border, and it speaks to the statement that I made there at the 17th session of the permanent forum.
Oh, David, I want to thank you very much. We're running short on time, but we want to go right into that tape. And at the end, your last paragraph, you call supporting the statement made by the Treaty Council. Made by the Treaty Council. And so we're going to play in rapid succession after that the United States responding to Ms. Yazzie, the Treaty Council statement, and then Ms. Jean Roach speaking on behalf of Leonard Peltier, who happened to be on the speakers list, to respond to the U.S. Fabrication about Leonard Peltier. Thank you very much, David Garcia. We'll be talking to you again. And let's roll it, Pedro. Hope.
Under the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Article 4, Indigenous peoples, in exercising their right to self-determination, have the right to autonomy or self-determination in matters related to their internal and local affairs, as well as ways or means for the financing their autonomous functions. Article 5, Indigenous peoples have the right to maintain and strengthen their distinct political and legal, economic, social, and cultural institutions, while retaining their rights to participate fully, if they choose, in the political, economic, social, and cultural life of the state. Article 36. 1. Indigenous peoples, in particular those divided by international borders, have the right to maintain and develop contacts, relations, and cooperation, including activities for spiritual, cultural, political, economic, and social purposes with their own members as well as other peoples across borders. 2. States, in consultation and cooperation with indigenous peoples, shall take effective measures to facilitate the exercise and ensure the implementation of these rights. We have tribal members who live in the state of Sonora in the country of Mexico. On January the 26, 2018, the Tohono Nation passed resolution opposing the construction of a physical wall on the nation's southern border boundary. The National Congress of American Indians also opposes the use of the so-called Section 102C waivers under illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act of 1996, which allows the Secretary of Homeland Security to waive all legal requirements that he determines necessary to ensure the expeditious construction of border barriers and roads. In closing, Madam Chair, my delegation congratulates this forum on the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and look forward in the USA for the National Action Plan to help assure implementation in regards to recommending on this body to initiate the preliminary study of a convention on the rights of Indigenous Peoples as being a procedural democratic process within the United Nations. In conclusion, in the statement that the delegate from the International Indian Treaty Rights, Ms. Yazzie, we support, along with the American Indian Movement, West supports her statement in regards to Leonard Peltier. Thank you.
To the representative of the United States.
Thank you, Madam, for giving me the floor today. Given this morning's discussion, we feel the need to reiterate some clarifications. The term criminalization of indigenous descent is an inaccurate and inflammatory term. We wish to clarify that disagreement with the policies of the United States government is protected under the First Amendment of the Constitution. Violent acts by anyone in response to government policies, however, is illegal and unacceptable and will be subject to all lawful sanctions. The implication that Leonard Peltier is incarcerated for dissent is inaccurate. Leonard Peltier was convicted of murdering two special agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, as well as other crimes, including escaping from custody after his initial conviction. His conviction and sentences have been reviewed and upheld numerous times by federal appellate courts. He has had two full and fair parole hearings and has been denied both times. Also, his petitions for clemency were reviewed and denied by both President George W. Bush in 2009 and President Barack Obama in 2017. The implication that dissent is criminalized in the United States is inaccurate. Thank you for this opportunity to make those clarifications. Thank you.
With Ms. Janine Hazi of the International Indian Treaty Council, you have the floor.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to share this statement on behalf of my elder, Lenny Foster, board member of the International Indian Treaty Council and retired supervisor of the Navajo Nation Corrections Project. Approximately 30,000 indigenous peoples are incarcerated in 23 states, with an additional 4,000 imprisoned in the federal system. Tribal members living on reservations are incarcerated in federal prisons at a rate of more than 249 per 100,000 residents. Due to the Major Crimes Act, which gives the federal government jurisdiction for selected crimes on Indian lands, mandatory minimum sentences and the abolishment of parole in the federal system mean indigenous peoples face harsher punishments than non-natives for what are effectively local crimes. One such person who has been repeatedly brought to the attention of the forum.
Oh, my relatives, we had some complications there. We weren't able to put the tape on of Miss Jean Roach, the international representative for Leonard Peltier and spokesperson who was there at the United Nations, who responded to the United States representative stating that Leonard Peltier is a murderer. Such complete fabrication. In fact, the federal prosecutor in front of the federal judge, Haney, had said that they had stated that they don't know who did the shooting of those two agents, nor what role Leonard Peltier played in it. And that should be enough to exonerate him. Let's see if we can get back to that tape of Miss Jean Roach. Thank you very much.
Years, he should be free. Our brother Leonard Peltier has been incarcerated for a crime the United States government has admitted to fabricating. Our brother Leonard said the FBI files are full of information that proves his innocence. Many of those files are being withheld. Former U.S. prosecutor Lynn Crook said to Judge Haney, "We do not know who killed our agents. Further, we do not know what participation of any Leonard had in it. The statement exonerates Leonard. Today, he is the longest-held human rights defender and political prisoner in this world. The Bureau of Prison Rules states an inmate must be placed within 500 miles of their home. Leonard is in Coleman Court over 2,000 miles and needs to go home to Turtle Mountain. His health deteriorates daily due to being confined with all natural foods and spiritual medicines. Last summer, he had a triple bypass surgery as a result of years of improper medical attention. He suffers great pain constantly. We keep seeking justice and respect for our people's human rights. Yet the U.S. continues to abuse indigenous nations under the nose of the U.N. and the world. It's time to address this genocidal treatment of our nation. We need your help. With attacks on our human rights defenders like Leonard Peltier and Red Fawn, who is also a political prisoner for defending our water at Standing Rock. When we stand up for our human rights, we are murdered, punished, and end up in jails and prisons. We respectfully request a 17-session United Nations Forum on Indigenous Issues to appoint Special Rapporteur Ms. Victoria Corpus to study the U.S. Department of Justice's actions that are based on racial discriminations and double standards. We also investigate the case of Leonard Peltier. We also ask the Special Rapporteur to make a personal visit to Leonard Peltier inside the U.S. prison in Coleman and report before the 18th United Nations Permanent Forum. Madam Chairman, in response to the United States statement this morning, lies, again, genocide, denial. We have the facts, the documents, treaties. We're tired of genocide. We've got to have something done. Leonard's been there for 43 years. It's time to bring him back.
Oh, my relatives, that's Miss Jean Roach. And okay, that's it. I want to thank David Garcia for calling in. A standing rock on the border. Let's keep an eye on there. My relatives, we'll see you at the Stanford Powwow. Starts today, Saturday, and Sunday, Mother's Day. We do have a booth there for Leonard Peltier. So come out there and join us. And that's it, my relatives. Another segment across Indian land.
Yo soy Gavilan Molina. And you're listening to KPFA 94.1 and KPFB at 89.3 FM in Berkeley, with 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, and KFCF at 88.1 FM in Fresno, Califas. You're cruising to La Onda Bajita's Radio del Barrio Aslan. Cristóbal, el Colón. Invasion, disease, death, destruction. Cristóbal El Colón. Memories of hell. From Alaska to the tip of Chile, our gentes are living sometimes like animals. We are at war sometimes with ourselves, whether it be at the local barrio or at any country south of the falls, frontera. We are at war with ourselves. Think about it. Why are we so screwed up? The answer is simple. Yes, there is only one answer. Everything was stolen from us. Absolutely everything was taken from us. And today here we are, fighting for crumbs, las ruinas, the garbage that's thrown out. What the hell is that about? If I were to go to Europe with a few raza and force them to speak Nahuatl, worship Quetzalcoatl and take everything of material value and send it back to my people here in Aslan, do you think all the Europeans would be asking for is for me to let a few more Europeans into the local government or some other small concession like that? Hell no. The Euros would kill me. They would not sleep until my throat was slit. Here we are, talking about hope, reform, and equality. Puro pedo. Puro por qué, porque estamos como estamos. Our people suffer now and have suffered just because of one problem. This problem is not something intangible or difficult to understand. El problema es colonialism, pure and simple. To say that anything other than the invaders is at fault for our misery implies that we are inferior, since we are not truly progressed. So every time that you go around claiming that the answer to our problems lies in some reform or in some other far-out plan, you are saying no one has had the thought of that. Our people have been so backwards that we haven't been able to do nothing for ourselves. Puro pedo, eh? It is a brown and white situation. One oppressor, one oppressed. One raped, one rapist, one enemy, one struggle. We were not plagued with poverty, gang violence, drug abuse, rape, and ignorance about our cultura in 1491. Today we don't have mierda, and we shouldn't expect to ever have anything more than that, for as we continue on this path of ignorance, apathy, and petty individualism based on greed and self-hate, when our peoples are concerned. But still we find some who buy into that thing of everything's gonna be all right if you accept the American dream. Wake up, pendejos. Es una pesadilla. The nightmare has arrived. And now through the skies it will rain hellfire with Star Wars. Docha, don't let anyone tell you things are better than they used to be. You don't see the Michi Migra pigs telling the undocumented raza things are better than they used to be before he shoots down la raza. 1,500 have died. at the U.S.-Mexican border because of Project Gatekeeper. 1,500 Mexicans have given their sweat and blood at the frontera. There is a war zone. Our people cross because of hunger. You don't see the grower telling the campesinos that things are better as they live in caves north of San Diego. You don't see the psycho mad dog Chicano Contra telling his Chicano brother that things are better before he shoots him down like a perro in the streets just for a michi name of a calle or a corner. And this is nothing compared to the pedo our people are living in other parts of this hemisphere. Anahuac, America. Don't talk about things are getting better. Everything is messed up and getting worse. When is we, La Raza, the so-called waking giant, are going to wake from our sleep and decide for ourselves that the time has come to take what is ours? We must all decide what is the true enemy and fight it on one front. No tenemos otra chance, Raza. If we're too far gone in the lies of liberalism and reforms, then we should expect the next 500 years to amount to what we have now. A huge pile of, ya saben, nada. All you have to do is look around to see the contradictions of the sistema here. White only, white power, the white rich men that rule the world. You can even reach out and touch them if you have the courage, but never forget who you are and who you were, though, and never turn away from who you are today. There might be some people who may take offense to what I'm saying, but the listeners must keep in mind the truth behind what I am saying. To take offense to this, comentarios taking offense to present sociological situation of Arrasa. I can see the logic behind that. The real issue now is that you are a human being with a receptive ear, with an open heart. What actions are you willing to take to help La Raza? Are you going to be a better Euro-Mexican? Are you going to be a better Anglo-Mexicano? The way things are going in this country, our people are economically, psychologically, and spiritually being forced up against the wall of colonialism. La Raza is rising. We, the sons and daughters of Cuauhtémoc, are once again rising con el sol. And as we rise, the shadow del águila is cast across the landscape. The browning of America is taking root. History will be made through our mass actions and demands for Chicano, Mexicano, Indio self-determination. So during these actions against racism, we must march, we must be vocal, we must be active, because La Raza is on the move, and the brown masses, in keeping with the prophecies, can no longer be kept down. Y acuérdese, Raza, and this is out to you, Jim Costner, don't let nobody and don't let nothing get you down.
Wherever the drum beats, we shall liberate.
La gente, la raza, somos solo una. Ni los muros, ni las púas, ni las balas, ni la propaganda racista, ni la xenofobia será nunca una barrera en nuestra tierra de siempre.
Yeah, the day I woke up in the mañana, cause I was dreaming about López de Santana. Feeling sad in my throat, un veneno. This motherfucker with the güeros al terreno. We wouldn't run to share it with los caballos. It was too late when we found out they were bien gachos. Books at school tell they always been decentes. We pushed the rain to kick out nuestra gente. With a jump, I sat down on a silla. Asking myself, where is Pancho Villa? Since we already got a full-scale invasion. Carrying us weapons, culture, white force, sin razón. MBS is gonna be un infierno. The Ku Klux Klan, the Nietzsche gobierno. Thatch is good, they'll try to kill you primero. The most important thing for them.
la conciencia y fuerte la resistencia contra los demonios fascistas y neoliberales que pasean arrogantes en la contrarrevolución Avenue. Once again, it's on. And I'm down for the feather in my ragtop Chevy. Hear the voice, hit the phone. Get your AK ready. Cause we done got an AK. I stand my ground lock and low in a firework. You say we cross the border, the border's crossed. It's an automatic thrust every time I bust. So just stand back or feel a head crack. Or turn ranks if it rocks on, then take it all back.
Miguel, we're going to get everything back.
So stay tuned now for Cruising to the Oldies, taking it from Rock and Rebellion to kicking it aquí on La Onda.
Tonight do it, baby. Tonight do it. a social shot, yeah. I'm a national breakout. So let me check your playlist, mama. Come on, let's make out.
Cruising aquí por vida.
Quiero a ti. triste. Lloré porque ya te perdí. That someday you'd want me, and someday you would love me, just the way that I love you. At last, you were walking beside me. There was love all
You're listening to La Onda Bajita, man, the voice of Aslan, one and only La Onda Bajita, always imitated, never recreated.
That is all I want you. I'd want your love. Every day is the same old thing. Just a wishing and a hoping that we. Cause every time you're here. I
Ole, yo soy Ventura, Mr. Truth Longoria, bringing you more information of what's up in Aslan. We here tell the truth. We tell it like it is. We bring you different kinds of program, public affair programming. We give you the other side of the story, the truth. We say that in Livermore, they're building nuclear weapons. We are tired of the mistreatment of the campesinos, the immigrants that are here toiling in the soil. It is time to take back our country. I see no color. All I see is poor people and rich people. In Richmond, when I drive in from Santa Rosa to go to work in Hayward, I see a black cloud coming out of those pipes. Let me tell you, there are things in the air. You ever hear of weather modification? It is time to challenge those that are making decisions for you and me. Those that are at the White House, at Sacramento State, that we have a voice. That we could all unite as brothers and sisters. That we could change what can't be changed. That we could challenge those individuals that don't believe that we are all human beings. That we are all here to live for peace and justice. Let us remember that we must continue the vision to bring hope, esperanza to our people in struggle. And I'd like to thank all of you. When we hear the calls from our listeners telling us to keep going forward, we will. And now I'm going to turn it over to El Gavilán with El Comentario.
Aslan's changing face. The world is changing. Changes are coming. Pero aquí, Gavilán, I have a few words for you. You know, the West has ravaged the world under the flag of a master-slave system, which in its finest hour of total hypocrisy is called the white man's burden, puro pedo. What sets the West, in particular the United States of America, is its persistence, its ability to stop at nothing, nada. Recall Manifest Destiny? No other race or religion ever quite matched the Christian Protestants' West in that regard. God we trust, just us. But then, those who oppressed, resisted, or refused felt the hellfire of the mighty U.S. They did not, as a rule, have the technology and the means to go on and on. The U.S. did and still does. The same dog determination is given its power for good or bad. Sadly, the U.S. has become a frightening example of the corruption of unchecked power. The curse of the U.S. invasion still hovers over Mexico and most of Latin America as its economies are ravished by U.S. and Western corporate interests. Perhaps in the children of Zapata lies the hope for a final solution to this war that Europe and its Euro outposts have waged on America, Africa, and Asia. Time to start thinking of a truly new world.
And joining me on the phone right now, we have
Bill Simmons of the International Indian Treaty Council. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Well, thank you so much for making some time to be with us. Can you talk a little bit about Richard Oakes?
Yes, I sure can. Well, Richard Oakes was a Mohawk. He was a student at the San Francisco State College, or San Francisco State. He was one of the first to begin to help start the American Indian Studies program, which at the time in the 60s was the very first program across Indian country. And Richard Oakes was very well known in the Indian community, and he helped organize one of their occupations and the takeover of Alcatraz Island. Later on, he was suspiciously shot by a security guard at a YMCA. It was never really determined what actually happened there, but many people feel that, you know, it was an assassination. But anyway, Richard Oakes was one of those heroes that has always gone unnoticed. Disturbing for me because, you know, to me, there's a war right here on our own border, right here on our own land.
In 1492, 1519, 1605 and 1620, the beast from the east invaded our shores, broke our peace and put us under siege. They made in place the new world order to maintain control. They turned us against one another, killed our fathers and raped our mothers to create confusion in the sea. The populace is motivated by lust and greed. Education, religion, and information controlled to train us and cover up the invasion. God is taking on his mentality. So now we're trapped in our own slavery, robbed us of our knowledge, ourself in our own land base. Got us thinking we're foreigners in our own place. That's how deep you wicked thieves put your scar. In the new millennium, my people still don't know who they are. You say it wasn't you, but your great-granddaddy. Now you wanna race the color lines and be down with me. Now that my people blind to their own slavery, now that they mimic the colonizers' identity. There was never a fault to sell the land. You killed our elders and stole it with your white hands. According to your laws, you still hold stolen property. None of you willing to give it back, hypocrite unity. You just want to keep my people blind and naive. And your wicked system used to want us to believe. It's like my comandante, yes, he said. We're here on a race, our indigenous roots. To avoid the stop of guerrilla squad.
Along the street of the prophets, an hour before sunrise. There are no cars on the street. He comes to a door and knocks.
Luchar al lado de los liberales, empuñó la pluma y se dedicó al periodismo, fustigó siempre la estancia de los franceses, fue uno de los muchos guerrilleros que mantuvo viva la llama de la República durante la intervención. Como hombre de letras, cultivó la poesía, el ensayo, la historia y el teatro. Escribió el libro rojo, texto basado en los archivos históricos de la Santa Inquisición. En una mañana soleada del 19 de junio de 1867, concluía el triunfo de los mexicanos al ser fusilado en el Cerro de las Campanas en Querétaro, Maximiliano, mientras su esposa Carlota, después de rogar por la vida de su esposo, el renuente Juárez, regresó a Europa, donde terminó recluida en un hospital psiquiátrico.
Letter to my father, October 2017. You once said, my reward for this life will be 1,000 pounds of dirt shoveled in my face. You were wrong. You are 7 pounds of ashes in a box, a Puerto Rican flag wrapped around you, next brick from the house in Plata where you were born, all crammed together on my bookshelf. You taught me there is no God, no life after this life, so I know you are not watching me type this letter over my shoulder. When I was a boy, you were God. I watched from the 7th floor of the projects as you walked down into the street to stop a public execution. A big man caught a small man stealing his car, and everyone in Brooklyn heard the car alarm wail of the condemned. He's killing me. At a word from you, the executioner's hand slipped from the hair of the thief. The kid was high, was all you said when you came back to us. When I was a boy, and you were God, we flew to Puerto Rico. You said, my grandfather was the mayor of Utuado. His name was Buenaventura. That means good fortune. I believed in your grandfather's name. I heard the tree frogs chanting to each other all night. I saw a banana leaf and elephant palm sprouting from the mountain's belly. I gnawed the mango's pit, and the sweet yellow hair stuck between my teeth. I said to you, you came from another planet. How did you do it? You said, every morning, just before I woke up, I saw the mountains. Every morning, I see the mountains. Utuado, three sisters, all in their 70s, all bedridden, all Pentecostales who only left the house for church, lay sleeping on mattresses spread across the floor when the hurricane gutted the mountain the way a butcher slices open a dangled pig, and a rolling wall of mud buried them, leaving the fourth sister to stagger into the street like an unheeded prophet about the end of the world. Utuado, a man who cultivated a garden of aguacate and carambola, feeding the avocado and star fruit to his nieces from New York, saw the trees in his garden beheaded all at once like the soldiers of a beaten army, and so hanged himself. Utuado, a welder and a handyman, rigged a pulley with a shopping cart to ferry rice and beans across the river where the bridge collapsed, witnessed the cart swaying above so many hands that raised a sign that told the helicopters, Campamento los Olvidados, Camp of the Forgotten. Los Olvidados wait 7 hours in line for a government meal of Skittles and Vienna sausage, or a tarp to cover the bones of a house with no roof as the fungus grows on their skin from sleeping on mattresses drenched with the spit of the hurricane. They drink the brown water, waiting for epic monsters in their bellies to visit plagues upon them. A nurse says, these people are going to have an epidemic. These people are going to die. The president flips rolls of paper towels to a crowd at a church in Guaynabo, Zeus lobbing thunderbolts on the locked ward of his delusions. Down the block, cousin Ricardo, Bernice's boy, says that somebody stole his can of diesel. I heard somebody ask you once if Puerto Rico needed to be free, and you said, 3 pulgadas de sangre en la calle, 3 inches of blood in the street. Now, 3 inches of mud flow through the streets of Utuado, and troops patrol the town as if guarding the vein of copper in the ground, as if a shovel digging graves in the backyard might strike the ore below, as if La Brigada swinging machetes to clear the road might remember the last uprising. I know you are not God. I have the proof. 7 pounds of ashes in a box on my bookshelf. Gods do not die, and yet I want you to be God again. Stride from the crowd to seize the president's arm before another roll of paper towel sails away. Thunder Spanish obscenities in his face. Banish him to a roofless rainstorm in Utuado so he unravels one soaked sheet after another till there is nothing left but his cardboard heart. I promised myself I would stop talking to you, white box of gray grit. You were deaf even before you died. Hear my promise now. I will take you to the mountains, the houses lost like ships at sea, rise blue and yellow from the mud. I will open my hands. I will scatter your ashes. El Tualo.
Martina Spada, reading Letter to My Father. Martina Spada is joining us today on Flashpoints. We're celebrating the fact that he was honored most recently with the 2018 Ruth Lilly Poetry Award. This is an extremely prestigious award, and he is the first Latino poet to ever be granted this award in the over 30 years of its being given out. It took them a long time, Martine.
Well, it has taken the literary establishment a long time to recognize Latino literature in general, or Latinx literature. It is a product of not simply what happens in the literary establishment. It goes far beyond that. It has everything to do with the absence of our voices in the national conversation, the absence of our faces on television, at the table, all those panels that you see, whether it's CNN or HBO. There are 60 million people of Latin American origin or descent in this country, and it is time for us to join that conversation. And in fact, it is time for us to take the lead in many aspects of that conversation, which I hope we are now beginning to do, whether it's in the world of poetry or politics or what have you.
Can I get you to read That We Will Sing, please?
Yes. I do believe that in these times, these Trumpian times, we need love poems. We need political poems, but we also need love poems. That said, what you're about to hear is a political love poem. And it's a poem for Lauren Marie Schmidt. Lauren is a poet in her own right with four collections of poetry published. She's working on a novel now. She's also a teacher. She has taught both in higher education and in high school. She has taught adult literacy at community college in Paterson, New Jersey. And in those days, when she was teaching adult literacy in Paterson, on her day off, she would volunteer to teach poetry at a drug and alcohol rehab center in Paterson called Ava's Village. And this is when, at that point, I couldn't resist the temptation to make jokes about St. Clair. But one day, there was an incident. She came home, she told me about it, something that happened at Ava's Village. It summarized to me what the principle of service and commitment to community are all about. That we will sing. I call you a saint, washing dishes at the soup kitchen, tutoring men who cannot write their own names, teaching poetry to the addicts, and I imagine Saint Sebastian, female and voluptuous this time, no arrows this time, white robe slipping to her waist, writhing in ecstasy at the touch of an invisible hand, green eyes cast heavenward, though we know there is no God in Paterson. Yet, in poetry class today, you gave the addicts a poem, and they sang the poem back to you. Lift every voice and sing. And so they did, even the man with one arm. And so their voices became human again, not the baying of wolves to be shot on sight by police at the sundown, but church voices, school voices, voices before the needle flooded their bodies and drowned all the songs, all the poems they knew. I imagine Neruda, telling the crowd he could not read to them the poem they wanted, the poem that begins, Puedo escribir los versos más tristes esta noche. Tonight I can write the saddest verses, since he did not bring that book with him. How the crowd rose together to chant the poem from memory back to the poet. Puedo escribir los versos más tristes esta noche, the saddest verses. Towards the addicts in a circle of folding chairs rose for you, speaking of God in Patterson to their teacher, the heretic, reaching for your hands as if they could take the spirit in your skin back to the shelter where they sleep tonight, touching you the way I touch you sometimes, not in lust, but in astonishment. Telling myself I did not imagine you, that you are here, that we will sing.
Martín Espada, reading from his poetry. Martín, again, has been honored with the 2018 Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize. And Martín, one of the things that, of course, is very interesting to me about your work is the fact that you were an attorney. You worked as an attorney first, working with folks to help them fight against slumlords and the kind of horrific treatment that poor people get in this country. Why did you, obviously you were always going to be a poet, weren't you? Why did you start there as a lawyer?
Well, I came from a working class household. And we had no concept of a literary education, for starters. I had no idea that there was this thing called an MFA. And in hindsight, I'm glad I didn't know. I got a BA in history from the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And the wise old men in my life, and they were men, my father and a professor by the name of Hill, respectively, both felt that the best way I could honor my commitment to community and my doing justice was as a lawyer. But, of course, a lawyer of a particular kind, not a tax lawyer, but a legal services lawyer. So I went to Northeastern University Law School in Boston. I got a degree there. And after law school, I practiced in the community in Boston. In particular, I became supervisor of a program called SU Clínica Legal, a legal services program for low-income Spanish-speaking tenants in Chelsea, Massachusetts. Chelsea, if you know the area, is a tough little town right across the Tobin Bridge from Boston. It's a gateway city, a city of immigrants. It always has been. And the immigrants in those days, being the late 80s and the early 90s, came from the Spanish-speaking Caribbean, Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic. They came from Central America and Salvador and Nicaragua. And they also came from Southeast Asia, so happens, from Vietnam and Cambodia. We represented these tenants in housing cases, eviction defense, no heat, rats and roaches, crazy landlords, and so on and so forth. And we trained and supervised law students from Suffolk University Law School to do the same. We had an office right there on Broadway, the Greater Boston Legal Services Office in Chelsea. And while I was practicing law, I was also practicing poetry. And in fact, I did, you alluded to this in the introduction, I did occasionally sit on the steps outside the courtroom with a legal pad on my knees, scribbling poems as I waited for my cases to be called. So there was this double life. And then I was discovered, the Boston Globe in particular ran more than one profile, and there was an angle to it. It was the poet lawyer, and note that poet always came before lawyer, poet dash lawyer. But it was considered to be a very bizarre combination, like something out of Greek mythology, the body of a lawyer and the head of a poet, running out of the woods. But that was me. And to a certain extent, it still is, because, you know, you, that legal training never leaves you. And whether I was a poet or an advocate, or whether I was a poet or a lawyer, I was acting as an advocate, speaking on behalf of those without an opportunity to be heard.
Well, I think we're going to need an advocate more than ever, given that we have a white supremacist president now and a Congress and a group at the leadership level that do not like brown people. And there really is, I'm calling it the beginning of an ethnic cleansing, the way that we're monitoring the situation at the border, and all these new private prisons being built, and the kinds of things that are now being said, the way in which people aren't even afraid to publicly talk about how it's important to break up the families so that they don't feel that they can stay here. Your thoughts on all of this?
Yes, it is new. You know, I've been around for a while. You've been around for a while. I make a practice now of asking the generation that came before me, the survivors of that generation, is this the worst president you've ever seen? Is this the worst presidency you've ever seen? And they all say the same thing. Yes. The other day I had a conversation with a 90 years old and a Donald Hall. He said that. Oh, yes, absolutely. And it seems that's the consensus across the board. And these are people who have a clear, sharp memory of the Nixon days. And we used to think Richard Nixon was the worst president in the history of this country, and he may have been up to the present day. And we know what Nixon was caught saying on those tapes, once those tapes were made public. We know what kind of racist he was. We know he conducted a genocidal war in Vietnam and then Cambodia with the help of his friend Kissinger. And in fact, Trump really, it doesn't have his own signature war yet. But Trump is clearly a white supremacist. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I don't think there's any controversy really about that designation. And it was there from the beginning of his candidacy, from the very beginning, if you recall, and I'm sure you do. When he announced his candidacy, he said what he said about Mexico. He said when Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. That was June 16, 2015. Now, it so happens that I wrote a poem about the first hate crime committed in the name of Donald Trump less than 2 months later. And it did not happen down south. It did not happen with the so-called alt-right. It happened in Boston, Massachusetts, which doesn't surprise me because I know the bedrock racism of that city and was part of the resistance to it.
Love to hear that poem.
Excuse me?
I'd love to hear that poem.
Oh, sure. So this is a poem about what happened. True story, and it's got an epigraph, which is the quotation that I just cited. The poem is called "Not for Him, the Fiery Lake of the False Prophet." Epigraph. When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. Donald Trump, June 16, 2015. He opened his mouth to scream in Spanish, so his mouth became a urinal at the ballpark. Scott and Steve, the Leader brothers, celebrating a night at Fenway where the Sox beat the Indians and a rookie named Rodriguez spun the seams on his changeup to hypnotize it. Try that night. Steve urinated on the door of his cell and Scott told the cops why they did it. Donald Trump is right. All these illegals need to be deported. He was a Mexican in a sleeping bag outside JFK station on a night in August, so they called him a wetback and emptied their bladders in his hair. In court, the lawyer spoke his name, Guillermo Rodriguez, immigrant with papers, crop picker in the fields, trader of bottles and cans collected in his cart. Two strangers squashed the cartilage in his nose like a can drained of beer. In dreams, he would remember the shoes digging into his rib cage, the pole raked repeatedly across his cheekbones and upraised knuckles, the high five over his body. Donald Trump is right, said Scott. Trump said, the people who are following me are very passionate. His hands fluttered as he spoke, a demagogue's hands, no blood under the fingernails, no whiff of urine.